Good morning and welcome back to Midpoint, your local source for politics, usually focused on local and state issues. But today we're going to talk about the Ukraine war, since there's been a lot going on with that during the last week, to say the least. If you tuned in expecting to hear Pat Kemp's voice this morning, well, I'm not Pat Kemp. I'm Gary Gibbons, and I'm here sitting in today for Pat, who was supposed to be subbing for Shelley Reback, but unfortunately, Pat was a victim of the Canadian airstrike, and she has been up there visiting her daughter and grandchildren, and called me frantically last night saying that because of the strike, she was unable to make it back to Tampa. So I'm happy to be here this morning, and I'm also want to take a moment to remember our good friend Rob Lori, who passed away on Sunday, and who is one of the best interviewers that I have ever heard in my lifetime. And Rob was a brilliant voice behind these station microphones for more than 40 years, and he left such a legacy here, and so many in our community are mourning his passing. And we just want to mention what a great person he was and what a difference he made in our community, and he will be missed by all of us. So now on to today's show. If you're like me, you probably have a lot of questions about the war in Ukraine. First and foremost, why does it seem like since January 20th of this year that the United States has appeared to change sides in the war and is coddling to Putin and Russia and not supporting Ukraine the way that we did when President Biden was in office? And secondly, I feel that the American media is doing a poor job of reporting about the war. And we're really interested to hear from WMNF listeners this morning. If you have a question or comment for our guests, and invite you to call the studio line at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So this morning, my guest in the studio is someone who was born in Ukraine and is now a United States citizen living here, and I'd like to welcome Roman Voloshin, a St. Petersburg, Florida resident and owner of Pierogi Bar Restaurant in downtown St. Pete. Welcome to Midpoint, Roman.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Thank you for being here. I wanted to talk a little bit about your background. Tell us how you ended up in the United States and your educational background. Just a little background about you and your family.
I was born in the former Soviet Union. Right now, Ukraine, we never called ourselves the Soviet Union. So like we had a joke about it, you know, that they have liberated it. There's nothing we can do with it. But we call ourselves Ukrainian. Graduated high school, graduated university in 1994. In 2002, moved to the United States, straight to St. Petersburg, Florida. Lived the dream, always wanted to live in the tropical climate near the ocean, and then there we go.
The humidity and the stupidity sometimes, right?
Well, I have a saying that in Florida, we have only 2 months, these 4 months of July and 8 months of August, and it reflects the weather, which is back home, just so to call. So I'm a graduate of University Lvivska Polytechnica. It's one of the oldest polytechnic schools in the world. You can thank for armored concrete as we know it, because that university has invented it back in 1861 or 62. I just can't remember. This is the very, very first armored concrete structure sitting at the university. It's the stairs which is supposed to collapse by all the calculation, but it's not collapsing for the past 100 years and so. So, and to become a student of that university, you go over and under, and then you're considered as a student. And then if alumni, you're doing an opposite. They just have a tradition, had a tradition. I don't even know if they do it right now. So I haven't been there for a while.
And then you moved here. You have family here and children, and you have a restaurant you're running, right?
Yes. Yeah. I have a very good, successful career in finance for 27 years. And I have a spouse, I have a daughter, I have a son. So my girls decided that they want to do pierogies one day when during the COVID. And we were making them from home and ended up buying a restaurant because we couldn't handle that volume which we produced. And we opened a Ukrainian restaurant. So only one full-service Ukrainian restaurant from here all the way to Washington, D.C. And I'm not even sure that the restaurant in Washington, D.C. is a full-service restaurant. I think they have only wine and beer, but we have the full bar. We have, like, authentic Ukrainian food, you know. It's, people know it, but, you know, people don't know it. They don't know that that's Ukrainian. So that's everything that's authentic, made from scratch, in-house by Ukrainian chefs. So it's all great. And plus, we have martinis, top-notch. Top-notch martinis, and we utilize local brewer, which is Kazuba Brewery. We use mostly alcohol from Kazuba Brewery for our martinis, our signature martinis.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the war itself. And you have, I understand, a brother-in-law who's in the army over there?
Yes, he's an officer, and we don't know where he's at, when he's at, what is he doing. Nobody knows that, so, and that's probably a good thing, so that we don't, and we will never find out. Maybe if the war ends, then he will tell something, but...
And how large is the Ukrainian army right now?
It's about 1 million strong. So there's 1 million people in there, 1 million plus. It's about 140, 160 in the front lines fighting directly Russians. But, you know, that's there's a lot of people in reserve, and there's a lot of officers, the pilots, the mechanics, the remote pilots, as they call the people who fly those drones, destroying Russian troops and everything else, who's ravaging our land, homeland.
And tell us what it's like for members. Your parents are still living in Ukraine, correct?
Yeah, my parents are there. My in-laws are there. My brother-in-law family is there. So every night it's a siren. Every night, whoever lives in the city, they usually go to the bomb shelter. Like, my parents don't have to. My wife's parents don't have to because they live in the country. So there's not much happening over there. There's pretty much just the civilians living. So that's. But then my mom says every day, I talk to my parents every day. My mom says that she's very stressed. It's kind of like depressing. It's like you feel fear every night that something's going to happen. You feel fear for other people. So. You know, there's a funeral pretty much every day. Someone is being put to rest because they have died fighting for Ukrainian independence and freedom. They're fighting for the freedom of Europe, I believe.
How do they feel about the way the United States seems to have changed its allegiance, if you will, in this war?
They'll say they feel a little bit disappointed. I wouldn't say they are frustrated, but they kind of like, why? The question is why? What happened? Why? How are we different? So we are protecting freedom. We're protecting democracy. We're protecting, you know, that's the core values of the Western world. And believe it or not, it's a frontier on the East. I mean, like, democracy ends in Ukraine, believe it or not. It's, you know, that. They've been voting for their government every 5 years for the past 33 years. They didn't have any election in the past 3 years because of war. It's not allowed by the Constitution, and you cannot violate the Constitution, and it wouldn't make any sense to change the government while in the active state of war, and the country is active state of war. So that's the reality of their life, you know. But they work, they fight, and sadly, they die. They die for the Western world freedom and Western world values, which they wanted to rejoin again after so many failed attempts historically.
Well, within the last week, we've had President Trump had his meeting in Alaska last Friday with Vladimir Putin. And in the days leading up to that meeting, Trump was all over the news saying that he really wanted a ceasefire, and he was going to be disappointed if there was no ceasefire. And suddenly, then Putin shows up, and what happens? Trump literally had American soldiers down on their knees rolling out the red carpet for Putin to walk on for a photo op, and then was glad handing him on the red carpet and you know, clasping his hands and shaking them. And they were supposed to have ceremonial toasts and then a news conference. But and at least one of the people that was in Putin's entourage was wearing an old USSR hockey sweater, I saw, sending a message that, you know, we want to come back and take over what was ours. Tell me about that and the fact that Russia continues to make the claim that they are the that Ukraine has always been Russian.
It's diplomatically saying it is incorrect. However, it's, you know, to believe Russians, it's to lie to yourself. That's the thing. No, Ukraine is not, it's not a part of Russia. It was forcefully taken, become a part of Russia. I would say that Russia should be the part of Ukraine because this is where it all started. As I mentioned to someone, if we can draw the parallel between Ukraine and Russia, who belongs to who, it's like state of California, the largest and the most populated states, I believe, will be claiming that Washington is theirs, so they can raise the monument in Sacramento and say, hey, we are the United States where it all started, when actually this is where it ended for me, right? So correct me if I'm wrong, if I don't know American history too well. That's what it is. And there was a foreign Russian foreign minister, Lavrov. It's actually, I think there was embarrassment. It was to show his disrespect for the United States because, as he mentioned on his press conference, that it was his tribute to the history, him wearing this shirt. So I don't think it was a tribute to the history. It was a tribute to show full disrespect what the United States is trying to do, trying to put a stop to that massacre. Russians are 1,100,000 strong casualties to that war. Ukrainians are about 300,000 right now. With on the Russian side, it's between 250 to 350 dead. On Ukrainian side, it's between 120 to 175 dead. It's inaccurate information because nobody knows that. And what United States is doing, they're trying to do anything and everything just to stop it. But at the other hand, I mean, you have to understand who you're dealing with. It's, again, I would like to draw the parallel that if, imagine that it's in 1933, United States is just recovering from the Great Depression, and Roosevelt, instead of forming FBI and going after all the gangsters and mobsters, have a seating with Al Capone. It didn't happen, right? So they just decimated that entire gang, and they decimated the entire thing with it, so to say. And it's the same thing. United States is meeting on Alaska, the land bought from Russia in the 19th century. They're sending them a signal, you know, and they're meeting with the worldwide gangsters and mobsters right now. Russia is a mobster state. There's no elections over there. There's no democracy over there. There's nothing over there. There's no even distantly to Ukraine. That's why they hate Ukraine. That's why they say that Ukraine is theirs, and that's why they want to take it. Because if Ukraine succeeds, Russia fails. And the only bad thing I feel like I see in that United States is trying to save Russia at the same time as they're trying to save Ukraine. And I fear that this is the last Ukrainian-Russian war. It's either us or them. Ukraine will either disappear once and forever from the planet Earth, or Russia will not be in existence in the country, but it wouldn't disappear. There'd probably be another 15 countries like the Soviet Union broke. So 15 independent countries. Keep in mind, there's over 100 nationalities in Russia. It's not a monolithic country. It has never formed a nation as, like, we can say that we have a nation in the United States. We got the people from all around the world, and everybody could live their dream, and everybody who wanted to live their dream was able to use all the opportunities and get it done. You can't get it done anywhere else in the world. And you definitely cannot get it done in Russia. You either become Russian, even if you're not Russian, you look like Asian, or you're from somewhere from Siberia. They didn't even know what the nationality would be. So that's the true, and it's a rough truth. And at the other hand, you have Ukrainians, one of the most educated countries in the former Soviet Union. 43% of the people as of 1991 had the education higher than high school. It's either college, bachelor's degree, or it's either master's degree in something. So, like, that was a goal all the time. That's the entire microelectronic industry was in Ukraine. The computing industry in Ukraine, like... Keep in mind, if you're using your iPhone, you're using Google, good 60% of the software is done by Ukrainian engineers. Believe it or not. All the autocorrect and all the screw-ups on the autocorrect is done by Ukrainian engineers. So your ChatGPT is written by Ukrainian engineers. I even know the guy who owns the company. We used to work together back in the days. We graduated from the same university. So it's not, you know, a lot of people don't know about Ukraine. And the thing that they don't know about Ukraine, what Ukraine is as a country, as a society, that's what probably makes a confusion for people who to side with and how to side with. But I guess America, like, I don't remember who said that, but, you know, America will make the right choice after making so many wrong choices, so one way or the other. So
that's after where we trying are. Everything else. I think it was Churchill.
Yeah, it was Churchill. Yeah. But Churchill also said you cannot negotiate with the tiger when your head is in his mouth, right? So that's the same thing, like forcing Ukraine to negotiate with Russians right now. Well, yeah, they have to stop ceasefire there. But ceasefire is not going to resolve anything. I think that's my personal opinion. As soon as the population of Moscow and St. Petersburg will start spending nights in bomb shelters as the population of Kyiv and Kharkiv is right now, as soon as they face the reality, this war will stop tomorrow. As soon as the bombs will start flying over Moscow and St. Petersburg, that will be over. You don't need to bomb any other people, any other cities in Russia. They don't decide anything. Those two cities do, especially Moscow. Because that Putin is afraid of his citizens in Moscow because they actually broke the Soviet Union. They helped Yeltsin back in the days to do that. So it's just the history. That's what it is. All the revolutions started in St. Petersburg and in Moscow in Russia. That's going to be the same thing. And, you know, those peace negotiations is just like Russians are taking advantage of everybody else, and they keep singing the same song. It's a kind of expression from translating from Ukrainian. They're not changing the topic. They're not changing the vinyl. They play the same song all over and all over and all over. The root causes of war, yada, yada, yada. And the root cause of war that you invaded independent country, which you were a guarantor of the sovereignty by the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, so, which United States, Great Britain, and Russia guaranteed Ukraine their sovereignty and integrity, which one of the guarantors invaded Ukraine. So that's the thing. And another one is China. That's the one who helps Russia to fight war with Ukraine. So stop China, stop China, you will stop Russia.
So it's China, Iran, North Korea are all helping Russia.
Yep.
And if we help Russia, then we're aligning with those countries, right?
You might be that. I wouldn't draw the same parallel, but it is a perpendicular. So it's not a parallel, but it's a perpendicular. If you touch that, if Ukraine will have to fight United States among those countries you named, that they're probably going to lose. See, the problem is Russia is not going to win the war with Ukraine, and Ukraine is not going to be able to defeat Russia. It's just incomparable forces are in play over there. And that's the reality, unfortunate reality. But, you know, on the positive note, Russians know they cannot lose, and they will. Ukrainians know that they cannot surrender because they will disappear, and they will not. And that's the truth. And that's what people of Ukraine are saying. So that's what my brother-in-law is saying. Nobody's going to surrender regardless of United States or not. They will fight till the last soldier. But fighting till the last soldier will mean that Russians will have to put about 10 million strong into a grave in order to take the whole Ukraine over.
Well, after the Putin and Trump met in Alaska, you know, that meeting was supposed to go on all day, and apparently Putin cut it short and Trump came out and started spitting out Russian talking points. No ceasefire, no NATO membership for Ukraine. Ukraine needs to give up territory that Russia seized in its invasion, Crimea and the Donbass region, which Russia has not even been successful in occupying. Why would that be something that would be part of some sort of a settlement? They haven't even taken over the land that they now say, well, that's what we need to get in order to leave. What's your feeling about these, all this talk about land swaps? That seems to be contrary to the concept of democracy and sovereignty.
I am confused when someone brings up the topic of the land swap. What are we going to be swapping for? So Ukraine will be swapping their lands for Ukrainian lands, or Russia's going to give up some territory for Ukraine, which they have, the eastern part, the Ukrainian-Russian borders on the east, that's the lands acquired in the 1924. The lands Kursk, remember, so Ukraine invaded Russia. They just recently retreated from over there. That's also Ukrainian. Belgorod is Ukrainian. So are they going to be giving those lands to Ukraine and taking Donbass at the same time, or what's going to be happening? Because if Ukraine will have to swap their lands for swapping the lands, it's not going to happen, because it's judicially, it's impossible. So, and it's a very, very difficult and very, very strong political trap from the Russian side. So it's the equation which does not have a solution, because those lands which are on the topic, they are part of, they are enlisted in Ukrainian constitution. In order to give up land by Ukrainian constitution, there is a certain path which has to be followed, and it will take more than 10 years. So we're not swapping any lands anytime soon to begin with. Now, at the second hand, why is it political trap? Because Russia has included those lands into the Russian constitution, and giving Russian lands by Russian constitution is not even possible at all. So there is no solution with it. There is no resolution for that war with, it's not about land, it's about existence. It's an existential war. If Ukraine wins, Ukraine will exist. If Ukraine loses, Ukraine will perish. If Russia gives up on war with Ukraine, Russia will still be Russia and Ukraine will still be Ukraine. And nothing's going to happen. What will happen over time, we'll see. Maybe Russia one day will come to senses and finally form a nation, which they are a rich country, and they can use it for good. Look at Norway, look at United Arab Emirates, and the people who use their natural resources for the commonwealth of everybody. And Russia uses that to rage wars and cause havoc in the entire world. That's true.
All right. Well, let's take a call from David in Tampa, who's been patiently holding for quite a while. David, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. You're on the air.
Cool, yeah. Thank you for, Gary, for filling in for Pat. That's too bad about getting stuck in the Air Canada strike.
Yeah. Air travel's tough these days.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I know. So I was curious, I read, just to give listeners a scale of like how big Ukraine is land-wise, it's like size of Texas, I think, is what I read. And there's a lot of agriculture there, I believe, still. And but one thing I noticed reading about recently, I think it was in Politico, and it's not been reported much, is there's been a big kind of net migration out of the country, you know, people trying to get away from the war, as you'd expect. But I was curious if your guest expects people maybe we'll come back, or is this a permanent thing with just greatly reduced population? I think it was like, maybe it's like half the population it was before the war.
Roman, you want to take that?
Officially, 6.4 million people left Ukraine. This is by the border record since the war started. About 300,000 came back already. So I even have the personal experience, because I had workers who worked at the restaurant for us, and they just like they couldn't make it. They had nostalgia won with them, and they came back to Ukraine, like two people. So about 250,000 are in the United States, about 200,000 are in Canada, and about 4.8 million people registered in Europe. Those people who are registered, so that those are official numbers. There's no census right now, so it's hard to tell how many people have stayed in Ukraine, but it's estimated around 34 million people right now living in Ukraine. Living, working, it's still agricultural. Last year, they were second largest world producer of corn, and they were a second large producer of grain at the same time. So,
and how large is the country? Is it he compared it to Texas?
Actually, we'll cover Texas, Alabama, and part of Kentucky, I believe. It's a large country. It's over 1,100 miles east to west, and about 1,000 miles north to south.
Wow, that's pretty big.
Yeah, it is big. It's by train, by the fast train, it takes about 32 hours to travel from west to east.
Wow. One thing I thought was interesting with Trump, you know, I think Trump wants to be Putin. You know, I think he sees him as a role model, you know. So, so I'm not surprised that, you know, he came out of the summit, you know, giving Putin's talking points. You know, I just, and I wonder, too, about Ukrainians. Are they disappointed with us for voting Trump in again? You know, like, I was disappointed. I was like, what the heck, man? How could we vote this guy in again? It's like, what?
I think what I hear from Ukrainians, they're mostly disappointed in Americans. It's not about Trump. It's not, you know, it's like a swing. We're going left, we're going right. We're going left, we're going right. Today with that guy, tomorrow with that guy. And here we are in the middle trying to solve the equation, which doesn't have a solution. And that's the reality. That's the truth. That's the truth. Yeah. I wouldn't even say they're disappointed. This is kind of like they're confused. It's like, what's going on? Hold on a second. Is Russia has a democratic election every 5 years, or Ukraine has a democratic election every 5 years? How many presidents was in Russia since 1999? Oh, one? How is that possible? Ukraine has, what, five presidents ever since 1999? So, the change of power. Ukraine is a strong and free and democratic country. This is what people don't realize. This is a part of the Western world. And I have a strong feeling and belief that the NATO has to ask Ukraine to join NATO, and they actually have to crawl to ask Ukraine to join NATO, because they have very well experienced army of 1 million people right now. They can protect Europe. Give them the weapons. Don't give them the right. They know how to run.
Yeah. Before we went on the air, we were chatting about that a little bit, and you said that the Ukrainians have really done remarkable things that other European armies probably could learn a lot from the Ukrainians on how to fight a war, especially being so undermanned, and yet 3.5 years later, here we are, and they seem to be really making some inroads against some of the Russian oil fields, the pipelines, the trains, all of the things that Russia really needs to they need energy to move their tanks, to move all of their weapons and their troops. And if it's been very strategic the way that Ukraine has done some of those bombing raids, as opposed to what Russia's doing, which is, you know, attacking civilians. Well, you have an email from Anonymous in St. Pete, who says, what can we as individuals do to help the Ukrainian cause?
That's a very interesting question. Write your own senator, write your representative to stand with Ukraine, to stand with the right cause. I think this will be the most appropriate thing you can do. If there is any sort of gathering where Ukrainians, and probably Ukrainians will be gathering on Sunday on the 24th, it's Ukrainian Independence Day, join that cause, you know, just show your support for Ukraine, because that's the support for the right cause. No matter how ridiculous it sounds, that when it comes to war and life and death, there's only white and black in that. There is no gray area there. There is no room to negotiate people's lives and people's future. So you have to stand with the right cause. If your values are freedom, if your values are is democracy, and then you have to stand for it. Otherwise, there will be a tyranny. Otherwise, there will be poverty. Trust me, I lived that life. I came from that Soviet Union. It's extremely depressing time, and I don't have any nostalgia, even if I was young and handsome back then. But still, you know, it's probably the worst time. And I know what the tyranny is. I know what you cannot say, what you want to say. I know what you cannot go anywhere you want to go. And it's a bad thing. It's really a bad thing. And we have to. We have to appreciate and we have to value what the Western values are giving us as individuals, as people. And that's what Ukrainians are fighting for. They want to be a part of it. And some for some reason, they're being pushed away. And I don't understand why. Like, why would you push them away? Why would you push the people who give so much to the humankind? Like the computers and everything else, you know.
So if you're just joining us, my name's Gary Gibbons, and I'm the guest host today on Midpoint. And my guest today is Roman Voloshin, who is Ukrainian-born but an American citizen here living in St. Petersburg. And we're talking about the Ukraine war. So if you have a question or comment, please give us a call, 813-239-9663. Or email at dj@wmnf.org. Let me see if we, I think we have another email. Here's a Bubba sent a text message. I had an idea about how bombing a nuclear power plant in Russia or have saboteur cause an accident there. Russia needs its own Chernobyl karma is Bubba's comment. Any thoughts about anything like that? That seems a little extreme.
It is very extreme. No, it's nothing is good. See, I was growing up during Chernobyl. I remember the day when it happened. It was unusual April of 1986. The weather was like in July, and we went hiking. We didn't know anything about it, this and that. I don't wish people live through what Ukraine lived at. So you have to understand the Chernobyl catastrophe affected life of almost 1 million people, and over 200,000 of that 1 million have never recovered for it. So it's a bad thing. You know, if you want a good cause and if you want something good for anyone ever, don't wish them bad. Wish them good. That's the thing. It's, you know, it's a human thing. It's one thing to protect your own land and bomb the military plant or bomb the train full of ammo. And another thing is to bomb in a nuclear plant, for instance, and causing a nuclear catastrophe. It's, believe it or not, Ukrainians are capable of creating nuclear weapon in a very short period of time. 73% of nuclear scientists of the former Soviet Unions are located in Ukraine, and they are still active and they're still working. Every single student of polytechnic school back in the days would have to take the class of nuclear power and how to initiate a nuclear reaction and what's needed for it. So it's not a joke. It's a very, very, very thin line, and it shouldn't be exceeded in their nuclear weapon and or nuclear power should never be used to harm. It has been designed for the benefit, not for destruction. So that's, remember Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that even if it stopped the war, but still think about the people who suffered from that and why wasn't it used after that. So that's not a good idea to do that. So,
okay. Yeah. We have a bunch of calls. Let's take John in New Tampa. John, are you on the air?
I am on the air. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a comment and two questions. First comment is, got a friend of mine who just got her medical degree in Italy. She's works in northern Italy. One of the biggest problems that she has, she deals with internal medicine, is cancers that were caused by the drift from the fallout with the Chernobyl in 60 and 70-year-old people right now. So as the speaker is saying, it's a real thing. So my first question is, and I think this is on everybody's mind, is a lot of the criticism about the current Ukrainian regime is centered around the old idea that it's as corrupt as the Soviet Union. So I'd like him to comment on that. And the second thing I'd like to ask is, since Russia violated the Budapest memo, which said, hey, you give your nuclear weapons, we won't attack you, and there's security guarantees, does Ukraine get its nuclear weapons back?
Good questions.
I'm going to start from the second one. I think I answered the second one with that question about bombing a nuclear plant to Russia. No, Ukraine didn't get their weapons back. I guarantee you that if they wanted to create a nuclear weapon, they will already have it, if they don't have it already. So that's
right.
That's the thing. Keep in mind, Chernobyl has over 36,000 metric tons of military-grade plutonium under that encampment, so that's why probably Russian bombed the cover of encampment back in the days, just to make sure that everybody comes in and they're not retracting that plutonium from them. That's just the speculation. To answer your first question, there is no such thing as Ukrainian regime. It's a Russian narrative to it. There is democratically elected parliament. We like it as Ukrainians, so we don't, or they like it as Ukrainians, so they don't, but they elect it and they have to deal with it. It has been democratically freely elected parliament and democratically and freely elected president. His last name is Zelensky, and if they like him or they don't like him, it's nobody else's business but Ukrainians. I think, personally, I don't like Zelensky as a person, as a comedian. I hated him. Because I think he's the cause of him as a general diagnosis of Ukrainians, that we are the same thing as Russians, that people like him caused that Russian thinks that Ukrainians are the same people, because he was making fun on Ukraine. But I think Zelensky as the president, as the president of Ukraine, is the best thing which could have happened to Ukraine. Because if there was someone else but Zelensky, I don't think we'll be fighting for 3 years right now. Sadly, but I kind of ran across the former presidents of Ukraine, couple of them, and I know what kind of people they are and what to expect from them, what happened. So that's to answer your first question.
Thank you, John. We've got a couple more callers I want to get to.
Thanks, Gary. Enjoy.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Joe in Venice. Joe, you there?
Hello. Yes, thank you. I just wonder if your guest would comment. I think Donald Trump is a very vengeful person, and I believe the first ambush of Zelensky at the White House a year ago, whatever it was showing his hate for Zelensky because of the Zelensky won't go after Hunter Biden. I don't know. I want to comment on what's happening right now, but I want to, you know, how did that whole Hunter Biden thing, I don't think Trump ever, you know, he'll hold a grudge for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Joe. We'll go ahead and get Roman's take on that.
It's a tricky question. I don't think I have an answer for that question. Who's Hunter Biden is? What does he have to do with Ukrainian-Russian war? So, or Ukraine whatsoever. So the guy was working for the Ukrainian company, was getting paid back then. It's an international practice.
Could I have the $5 meal deal, please?
At the moment, it's only a $6 meal deal.
All right. Let's go to John in St. Pete. John, you there?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
Hey, my question, first of all, Roman, what a pleasure hearing how intelligent you are about the Ukrainian war against Russia and pierogi inn. Oh, man, is it good. Chicken Kyiv, I believe. It's Kyiv. Is that how you say it? The capital?
Kyiv.
The best I ever had.
Kyiv. Kyiv, it's a Russian narrative. We hate it.
right. Exactly. Well, my question is, as the D.C. takeover with federalizing people to take over a certain district, is that comparable to something you've experienced in Ukraine in the past?
I don't think I can draw any analogy for that, because it's, believe it or not, it's two very, very different. But it's what was in Soviet Union, how centralized everything was, and what is in Ukraine, how decentralized everything else. So this police and special forces have different gradation. I don't even think it's possible in Ukraine to make that way. And I do not know what's happening in D.C. I'm not very familiar with. I love the city, but I do not know what's the political structure of D.C. So I will be very wrong person to ask that question. But thanks for asking.
Well, yeah, and lastly, perhaps in Donbass region, it is happening. Maybe that is the way they're centralizing their government.
Right now, it's controlled by the Russian military, from what I know. So, and it's a military government. So, this everything happens through that. So, I know for a fact they don't have fresh water. They have running water whatsoever. It's being delivered three times a week for them. So, because all the water was. They didn't know. They bombed the city. They annihilated the city, which was providing water for the entire Donbass region. So there's nothing. There's no pump stations over there. That's the results of the war. Man. And that's what people's facing on the occupied territories.
Thank you, John. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
We've got Eric in Tampa. Eric, are you there?
Yes, good morning. I have two questions for your guest. I had heard on a broadcast recently there was some inference that Putin is mentally ill. That's my first question, and I wanted to see what you thought of that. And my second question was, if Putin and Russia were to prevail over Ukraine, do you think it would provide the impetus to then invade Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, and that sort of thing?
Well, I'll start from the first question. I don't have medical degree to give Putin evaluation if he is mentally unstable or he's not. So I'm partially joking, partially serious on that.
Yeah.
I like to read. I read a lot. And then I read something if you're too long in power, you're already wacko. So, and that's what probably is. I mean, but who knows? Maybe it's just his agenda, because what he was saying in the 90s and early 2000s and what he was saying in the mid 2000s and then what he's saying right now, it's four different people. So I'm not even sure that the Putin we see right now, it's the same person which they elected in 1999. So that guy might be long dead. What was the second question? I'm sorry.
If Russia and Putin, of course, were to prevail in Ukraine and basically win the war, would that provide the impetus to further his ambitions for Czechoslovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, all of the Baltic states that Russia controlled when they were the USSR?
Yeah, Baltic states are next. Poland is next, that's for sure. Exactly same thing will happen, what happened in 1943. You have approximately 9 million men in Ukraine, age 18 to 45, which can be enlisted in the army without their will, and they will be sent to march through Europe like cannon meat.
Wow.
That's what's going to happen. It's an existential war, because if Russians win the war, they will enlist all these guys and they will do exactly the same thing as they done in 1943 when Germans were retreating and when Red Army was offending Germans. They were enlisting young men, not arming them, and they were just marching by hundreds of thousands to the German troops. So the Germans literally ran out of ammo to kill those poor people. I guarantee you, if Ukraine loses the war to Russia, that's going to happen exact the same thing. No that's Poland, no Czech, no Slovak, no Hungarian will be fighting Russians. Hungarian gave up Russians within 2 hours. Czechs gave up Russians within 4 hours back in the day. We've been fighting them for 3.5 years. Just make a comparison. That's the thing. It's an existential war for Ukrainians. It's either us or them. And as I mentioned previously, if Ukraine loses, Ukraine will disappear from the planet Earth. If Russia loses, Russia will still be Russia and Ukraine will still be Ukraine. And maybe 70, 80 years later, when Russia will be denazified like Nazi Germany, maybe something will happen. Maybe they will be civilized people. They will have an example of Ukraine. How can you become successful and wealthy and well-being if you are democratic and free state rather than what you are right now? But, you know, it's all just guessing.
Yeah, I think the U.S. could probably take some lessons from Ukraine on how to protect democracy. We're not seeming to do a very good job of it these days. We do have another text message. This one, thank you for calling, Eric. Putin was a KGB operative, director, and present autocrat. I imagine his motives are not just. Why would anyone trust this man? And what does it say that the U.S. administration wants to cozy up to him?
You have to basically refer to the people, go to YouTube, do the search, KGB, U.S. You will get an answer on your question. I don't think I am an expert in that area. But from my personal experience, everybody who was in the Soviet Union back in the late 80s, before you go into the KGB agent, we have a department number 2 in the university. So, and I was the class president for 5 years. So I had to report to them every 6 months. We had a talk. And when the Soviet Union broke down and I graduated, I was hanging my case. I was saying unreliable. So that's, I was very proud of that. They tried to kind of like get you working for them regardless. And these people are using the same things which they were using for hundreds of years. And it's a very dangerous organization. It's not like FBI or CIA. To the comparison, it's a mob. It's a secret service which runs as a mob. They're allowed to be corrupt. They're allowed to bilk the businesses. They're allowed to be racketeers, and at the same time, they're protecting themselves. What Americans have to understand: you are dealing with tens of thousands of extremely highly educated and intelligent people who work on a psychology, who prepare their agents to get the things done, what they're doing here. And the way everything has happened between the president of the United States and the Russia right now, it looks like it's a very well planned and very well organized operation against the United States, and especially the presidents of the United States, to undermine the major supporter of Ukraine. So, and it's not only it, it's like we have a joke, it's a Russian national sport to embarrass Americans. And so far, what I see as American, they have succeeded. Like Gary mentioned, U.S. soldiers on their knees rolling the red carpet to the war criminal and mass murderer. For me, as American citizen, it's an embarrassment. I was shocked, truly. Now, the result, being asked a couple hours before that by ABC News, what will be the result of that negotiation? So nothing's gonna change, and nothing's changed. And you can't force anyone to negotiate. There's no reason, there's no sense for negotiations with Russians. The Russians only understand brute force. As I said, as soon as the bombs start falling on Moscow and St. Petersburg, that war will stop the next week. There will be true negotiations. As far as there's nothing like that happening, there won't be any negotiations. The KGB will be playing their game. And unfortunately, the free world will be losing to it because we bring to the table two different things. You bring the fine silverware to the table where the boar is being butchered. It's just not enough. I hope it's right comparison to it. So,
and we have time for maybe one more call. Jim in Tampa.
Hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Good. What's your question?
I really feel this is a disgusting situation, the way we're dealing with Ukraine. And I think that it's everybody against Ukraine, because I think our leader is in the pocket of Russia, and he's been there since 1987. And I just walked up the stairs. And I really feel bad for Ukraine, and I hope the EU stands behind them, and we get this thing solidified, because I don't think that they're going to get any help from the U.S.
Yeah, and Europe certainly jumped to Zelensky's aid this week. I mean, within 24 hours, they were all changing their schedules to fly to Washington. The British or the French president, Macron, the Italian prime minister, the British prime minister, the Finnish president, the NATO secretary, a bunch of folks who were, I think, shared your feeling that, the president is in the pocket. And I know that there have been, the cartoonists have had a field day this week. I've seen lots of cartoons with Putin playing Trump like a fiddle, like a violin. So,
well, he's not playing him like a fiddle. He owns him. And he's owned him since 1987. You can check that out. It goes all the way down to the Epstein thing, where Epstein put in a bid for $37 million for property, and Trump took Trump over there to look at the swimming pool because he wanted to move it. He didn't like where it was when he bought the place. And all of a sudden, Trump comes up with $40 million. Epstein said he didn't have it. He got it from oligarchs. And 2 years, and 2 years later, Trump sold the property for $95 million. And Don Jr. even said that the Trump Tower was filled with Russians. It's online. You can see Don Jr.'s, proud of that.
Very good. Well, Jim, we're getting close to the end here, and we need to run, but thank you so much for your call and for your comments.
All my prayers to and everything. If there's a God, he will help Ukraine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Roman, thank you so much for being here today and for sharing some information about what's going on in this horrible conflict and giving us some perspective on, what it's like for the folks that live there on a daily basis, the fact that the drones are showing up every night and they've got to go to bomb shelters. It's horrific. And thank you for being here today. We really appreciate you. And we want you to stay tuned for Talking Animals coming up and the conversation after that with Mario Nunez and Joaquin Carter. And this is WMNF Tampa, and we are Midpoint. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, this is Tom Scherberger, former host of WMNF's Wavemakers. I hope you'll join me for the launch of a new in-person speaker series called Wavemakers Live. I'll be your host for lively conversations with people making a difference around Florida and Tampa Bay. We kick things off August 21st with WMNF's own Nadine Smith. You know Nadine as the host of the Wide Awake America Public Affairs Show, but she's also the co-founder of Equality Florida, where she's been fighting for equal rights for 30 years and was one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. We'll talk about how the right-wing agenda nationally has its roots in Florida and how Florida can provide a blueprint for resistance. Join us on August 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Commodore in Ybor City. Tickets are $10 in advance and $15 at the door. Doors open at 7. Space is limited, so buy your tickets now on WMNF.org.